Good morning. You're here, hopefully, to learn about life without textbooks. Good evening or good afternoon for those on the video session. This is being broadcast to many of the global participants that we have online. So if you're going to be asking questions this morning, and we would encourage you to do so, there are a number of microphone stands that are around. We would ask that you please approach one of the microphone stands to ask your question so that all of our audience online will be able to hear you. My name is Shel Wagoner. I'm the Senior Vice President of Internet2 and one of the executive sponsors for a number of projects in the exploration of a future without textbooks, recognizing that we are a long way from that future today, and everyone is uncertain how to get there. The publishers don't know what life will be like post-paper. Certainly faculty members and how they select content have so many options today. What does that look like at your institutions? What is the role of an institution in the selection and distribution and presentation of content? Many of our institutions have never, in fact, been responsible for any aspect of content distribution other than ensuring that you had a bookstore. Like the Pony Express before it, there are new ways to do that. And so what's the relationship with our bookstores, with the faculty, with the students, the publishers, the platforms, the technologists? It's an interesting mix. So to help us navigate through that, Internet2 and EDUCAUSE began a series of pilot programs not designed to resolve the problems, but to expose, in fact, opportunities, solutions, and challenges as we all navigate this together. 100 of your professional colleagues, institutions around the country, participated in various webinars and in projects where they tried different business models, they tried engagements with their campuses in different ways, and then we collect that and work with EDUCAUSE and the ECAR team to publish results, white papers, and commentary. So today joining me is a panel of folks that on your behalf have worked extremely hard to bring some of these issues to light. Susan Graycheck is from EDUCAUSE and our partner here. She is responsible for the ECAR portfolio and does support for all of the research activities within EDUCAUSE. Claire Vandenblink is the representative from campuses, recognizing that we've had many campuses involved in this project. Claire will be speaking from her role at Cornell and responsible for the academic technologies and pedagogy distribution here. She has been a key player in helping us design the pilots themselves. What is it that we want to evaluate and what do we want to do? Bruce Ma is the CIO at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Bruce, from a technology perspective, has been one of the strongest and most persuasive advocates of full accessibility in design. How do we do technologies that will be accessible to all students, faculty, staff, and learners and teachers everywhere? He has been looking at how we do this to support scale. How can we ensure that everyone has access? What happens in a world where each faculty member picks a piece of content that is only available on a certain piece of technology? In the old days, that meant only available on paper, and generally speaking, it was the cost of paper that was the concern. Now, think about a world where every student must have a bat belt of every piece of technology in order to be able to read a book. So Bruce has been working tirelessly with the community on standards to help ensure that we find a path forward. And then finally, my colleague Dana Voss, she has been a program manager within the Internet2 NetPlus program and has been the design partner in supporting the creation of this pilot, and will speak to some of the results from the overall pilot. So while this is a panel session, we're actually going to do it in a series of micro presentations, if you will, and we will in fact ask you to ask questions throughout the session rather than at the very end, as each of the presenters will be covering some different content. So again, I encourage you to please make your way to the microphone and ask your question to each of the presenters in turn, so they will go through their materials and then call on you for questions. So I think we have our program laid out for us today, and so with that, I'm going to turn it over. I think we're starting with Susan Graycheck. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shel. Thank you, everybody, for coming, including our online audience. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the results of the pilot study that we did across the institutions who were participating in the e-textbook evaluation. Over the course of several different pilots, we had more than 50 colleges and universities who participated, representing over 25,000 students. And they used textbooks from many thousands of undergraduate and graduate courses. There were partnerships with various vendors, including CourseLoad, CourseMark, platform providers, and publishers McGraw-Hill and others. The data that I'll talk to you about today, however, will be the pilot that we evaluated in EDUCAUSE, in the EDUCAUSE Center for Analysis and Research. That was the pilot data that were collected in the fall of 2012. In that pilot, 20 institutions participated. They participated in a couple of different studies. We had multiple sources of data. Our overall baseline study, in which we kind of evaluated students and faculty general experiences with the e-textbook, was participated in by 17 institutions, over 5,000 students, and almost 100 faculty. It included a survey of students and of faculty, most of the faculty data were collected not by survey, but interviews or focus groups. Then there was an additional study, and actually Claire from Cornell was one of the leaders of that study, and that was to focus specifically on the impact of e-textbooks on teaching and learning. And seven institutions, there was some but not complete overlap between the baseline and the teaching and learning study. Seven participated in that. And including students and faculty. And then finally, we augmented that with usage data to see how faculty who were using the textbooks in their courses actually used the e-textbooks and how the students used them as well. And they were simple counts. Of course, you know, you get these data and you think, boy, I wish we had more data and different kinds of data. But we had the usage data that we were able to get from the platform providers. And I think that gave us some useful information. Just to give you a sense for how the pilot was structured. Each institution paid a fee to participate in the pilot because there were costs associated with it that needed to be covered. However, no institutions passed those costs on to students or faculty. So for the students and faculty who are participating in this pilot, in effect, they got the e-textbook for free. And we kind of averaged the course of the price of the textbooks out across all the students in all the courses and all the textbooks, and estimated that delivered savings to those student participants of about $137 per student on average. And then digital versions of the McGraw-Hill textbooks were provided to the faculty and students and teaching assistants in the almost 400 pilot courses. And the other aspect of the pilot is that access to the e-textbooks expired at the end of the pilot. So it's important for you to understand that there were aspects of this pilot that would be very, very similar with a mainstream deployment of e-textbooks in an institution, but there were also constraints that were specific to the pilot, such as the expiration of the access to the e-textbooks, and that probably had an influence. And in fact, we know from the interviews that indeed it did. So overall, we asked a couple of questions, and one question was abstracting from the pilot, abstracting from e-textbook itself, we wanted to know whether this overall approach to exploring e-services and content was a good approach. And 71% agreed that it was, and only 6% said that they felt that it wasn't. Again, most people said that they almost certainly or probably would participate in such an activity again. So that's really good information for Internet 2 and for EDUCAUSE to have for future services as well. I'm going to give you a little bit of information about usage and then dive deeply into one specific and what I thought was rather interesting aspect of the pilot. I'm not going to attempt to summarize all the pilot results except in this slide, which is to say, overall, what we found is that we looked at the results and we looked at the various aspects of value and feature in e-textbooks. And we found that there was a cost component, a component about availability, meaning, can I get it anywhere, anytime, at my home, on campus, at my workplace, do I need a network connection or not? And then portability, the fact that I can carry around a little device that has the e-textbooks versus having to lug a whole bunch of paper textbooks. Functionality. We all have very innate senses of what it's like to use a paper textbook, but what about the functionality of the e-textbooks? And then innovation, actually being able to do something transformative with e-textbooks, with textbooks delivered electronically. And what we found was kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have to satisfy the base before you can get to the top of the pyramid. And we found that the base, both for students and faculty, was cost. And what students said was, if it's cheap enough, then I care about these other things. But if I'm not going to save money on these e-textbooks, then these other aspects are not as important to me. You got to save money. That's my baseline need. And faculty said the same thing. It was very, very important to them that their students be saving money. That was their primary criteria. And also, part of cost was also cost to the environment. So not for everybody, but for a significant minority of people, the sustainability issue was very, very important. Overall, we found that the most frequent use of the e-textbook was to view pages, and some of these extra features tended to be used more by students than they did by faculty and TAs. And again, a lot of this is probably an adoption curve as well. We found that in general, fewer than half of faculty actually said they incorporated the e-textbooks into their teaching versus having the e-textbook be assigned reading but not actually teaching from the e-textbook in their teaching. For many of these faculty, it was the first time that they had actually used an e-textbook. Most faculty provided some sort of orientation to the course. And this is important because what we're going to see later on is that faculty's use and incorporation of the e-textbooks in the course had an influence on students' experience. So we know it's uneven. The other thing that we did was we looked overall at the extent to which students and faculty didn't like the e-textbooks, were supporters of e-textbooks, or were neutral about them. And with students, we also identified a slice who were strong, passionate adherents. And we got these data both from their answers to some of the quantitative questions on the survey, but also through qualitative analysis of their comments. And some people are just passionate, I love e-text, this is a wonderful thing. And other people were just as equally passionate on the other side. And then there were a whole bunch of people in the middle. So what we found when we looked at the adherents versus the detractors among the students is that really did color their evaluation of e-textbooks. The people who were detractors were people who were more likely to tell us that it was hard for them to learn how to use the e-textbooks. I'm not imputing causality here, mind you, but they had a harder time. Did that cause them to be detractors, or was their distaste for e-textbook perhaps setting up some barriers in their openness to learning how to use it? We don't really know. Adherents were also more likely to find that the instructors' highlights and annotations were useful, that the material that the instructor added was useful, and they were also more likely to find that course load, the e-textbook platform, was easy to use, and they were also more likely to plan to purchase textbooks in the future. All right? So, okay, this just tells you that there were adherents and detractors and that they had different opinions. Well, what was interesting about this was that when we looked at the usage data and we looked course by course by course, we found that there were differences among the faculty in the extent to which faculty in any given course actually used the extra features and incorporated them into their teaching, incorporated more features, et cetera. And what we found was that students who were in courses where faculty actually applied and used the e-textbooks more were more likely to be adherents of e-textbooks. And I'm going to go out on an editorial limb here and suggest that that might mean that faculty's use actually had an influence and an impact on students' appreciation of likely to adopt, likely to appreciate e-textbooks, get value from them, and be willing to use them again. So that was the little piece that I wanted to dive into. The report overall is available on the web, and I'll just get back to the tops of the waves for the overall report before I hand this off. Overall, the conclusions that the pilot shows, we've got to address faculty and students' fundamental motivations. Today's course materials are far too expensive, and as I said, there's an environmental piece of that students and faculty both want choice. Some people still want print, and that was very, very clear in the data. They want to be able to access it offline as well. They do not need to have a network connection, because they don't need to have a network connection for print textbooks. And they also want to be able to choose where they get their textbooks. So they don't want to be dictated, here's your textbook, and we're going to give it to you in this format. However, they also see digital course materials are the way of the future. And so, and I think that we're all seeing that as well. So I think that we overall, as an ecosystem, and I don't just mean IT or people in higher education, but I also mean the marketplace that supports that, need to understand that we need these devices to be, we need these materials to be available on the devices that students use now, the whole range of device. So BYOD definitely should have an influence on the architecture of e-text materials. And we should make sure that we understand that students' experiences as consumers of electronic technologies are influencing their expectations and their demands of what we will deliver for them in e-content. Students are here and faculty are here to teach and learn, and they are fine with getting some help, but we need to provide them that support. So we need to support faculty to be more effective in using this, and students as well. Again, a little bit of editorializing, I would suggest that perhaps this is a time for us to think transformatively. And do we really just want to take the existing template of the publisher-provided content and just overlay that on electronic media, or do we want to think more broadly from that? The pilot participants, some of them suggested, why don't we think about other alternatives, electronic resources and the like. Another thing that the pilot showed us is that it takes a village to do a project like this, and there was an average of 11 different units in the institution who were participating in the e-textbook pilot, of which IT was one. So this is a real change management issue, and it's a real collaborative issue. And then again, the issue of faculty, and I think that you could see that faculty played a critical role, and so we need to both incentivize but also empower faculty and have them come along with us on this journey. I will pause for questions. Yes, if you come to the microphone, make sure our online audience can hear you as well.
More of a comment than a question, but how do we get to the faculty influence when the baseline need for students is cost?
You address that cost. That cost issue. Many faculty.
We do, or the publishers do.
Our marketplace does, and so I would suggest, and I'm sure my panelists are going to have opinions about this as well, but that we might want to be advocates on behalf of the students with the faculty to be able to bring this cost down. Bruce, Claire, do you have anything to add to that?
Having alternatives and having a healthy marketplace and having dialogue between higher education and between the publishing industry working together as partners, I think, is our best path forward. and, as Brad Wheeler says, bringing it to scale.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi, thank you so much for sharing this research with Flat World. So we are one of the alternatives, and I just wanted to make a quick comment. Mm-hmm. The research that we are learning between print and digital, the answer is both. But what does it mean to be both? It means that students like the ability to print a subset of those materials. So let's suppose that out of a 200-page equivalent textbook, there are 30 or 40 pages that the student wants to print, notes, annotations, highlights. At 10 cents a page, the printing cost is $4. The cost of the digital textbook, 20 or 30. So in our view, the answer is not either or, it's definitely both. But print doesn't mean you're gonna print 300 pages. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and I think the only thing that I would add to that would be the observation that this is a marketplace, a set of technologies, a set of alternatives that is still actively evolving and shaping. And so the solutions are not mature, and we probably can't imagine some of the solutions at this point. But the other thing to understand is that the consumers of this information are also still coming up to speed with the possibilities. So it's kind of bringing us all along. And yes, thank you. And then perhaps one final question, and then I'll hand it over to Bruce in the interest of time.
Great. Thank you. So you looked at student reading. Did you look at any comparison in the courses between the amount that students read and the amount that was assigned?
Yes, we did. We asked the extent to which students did or did not complete the assigned reading. I want to say 80% of the students completed the assigned reading. Don't quote me on that. Yes, Barbara, and this will be the last question.
Good morning. I guess the question I have is, it sounds like all of these, the pilot, were face-to-face, hybrid, or on-ground courses. Is there any attempt to look at the differences between students and faculty in online versus on-ground courses with regard to e-textbooks?
Mm-hmm. Dana, do you know of any attempts, Claire, with this pilot? Yeah. Okay. It was all face-to-face, Barbara. We aren't aware of any plans within this to look at online or hybrid. Now, I'm delighted and honored to introduce Bruce Moss. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. I really appreciate the fact EDUCAUSE Center for Analysis and Research is involved bringing a research focus to this, that it helps brings tremendous value to the community rather than just personal opinions. I'd like to recognize just a number of individuals and or organizations that I've interacted with over the last while who have been a big part of what we've done at Wisconsin. And first is Brad Wheeler, Indiana University. They're the ones who set the stage for this. They're the ones who told the rest of us what they were doing and encouraged us to get going in some pilots. So I thank Indiana for the leadership role. Then we have a team at the University of Wisconsin that's been involved. You know some of them, Judy Caruso, Jan Cheatham from Academic Technology, Carrie Nelson from Libraries, and Nancy Lynch from our legal counsel been involved. And this has been a team effort. I have the privilege of representing Wisconsin, but this is a great team to work with. I don't always make life easy for them by pushing the boundaries, but they seem to always respond really well, so I want to thank them. And the last one is to recognize Mark Riccobono from the National Federation of the Blind. Mark is the director of the Jernigan Institute, and Mark is a University of Wisconsin alum, also worked in our disability services office. So early on we reached out to Mark, and he did not disappoint us. He gave us feedback. Feedback, I am told, is a gift, and we received the gift of feedback from the NFB, and I believe that that opened up the doors for more dialogue between Internet 2, EDUCAUSE, certainly University of Wisconsin, and National Federation of the Blind, and I would like to see that continue. They are a constituency group. They deserve to be at the table and working with us side by side as we move through this. So I've got a serious small number of slides. We've gone through, along with Cornell, we've gone through from the beginning with multiple pilots. And there's a trend that we're seeing. Pilot one's at the bottom. Pilot two that we had is, pilot one was a small pilot with a small group of universities. Pilot two was the first one where we had the EDUCAUSE Internet two larger pilot. And our third one was, we did with CourseSmart, first two were with CourseLoad. And we're seeing a clear trend here in the response. And the question is, do e-text or paper textbooks provide you with a better learning experience? We knew there was going to be a trend here over time. This was new for students, and we're seeing clear evidence as we interview our students that they're saying e-text is preferential as we've gone through our pilots. We expect that to continue. Like any new technology, there's an adjustment period that you go through. The next is the use of e-text on devices, as you might predict. So we have here our two scale pilots, Pilot 2, Pilot 3. Pilot 2 is in red, and Pilot 3 is in blue. And you see most of the usage is with a laptop, but you see that declining, where use of laptop has gone down with the second pilot. Use on the desktop has gone down. And a pretty sizable change is taking place with tablets, at which that's third line down. Tablet usage has gone up tremendously, and we expect that to continue to take off tremendously as tablets become utilized more and more. We did this word cloud of things that students liked about the pilot that we did with CourseSmart, and some of the things students wanted but they did not have in CourseSmart. So as you can see, some of the things that showed up, search, offline access. Offline access was pretty important. We have a very robust wireless network on our campus, but even with that, many of our students live in other residence locations, and sometimes they're traveling and going back home for the weekend, and offline access was extremely important to them, highlighting, searching. And some of the smaller ones you see on here are some of the things that aren't as important to them. Now we get to the question that we heard before, importance of low price. Again, pilot one is at the bottom, and the blue is moderately to extremely important. So the question is, how important is an e-text cost? Is it that e-text costs less than a used or rented traditional paper textbook? And that's the way we decided to present that. So you will notice that in pilot three, almost everyone said it is very important that they come in around that price point. That was kind of interesting to see. Our first pilot, I don't think many of us knew what to expect. Certainly the students didn't. It was a rushed project, frankly. It's not the way the textbook says to do project management. I set a goal date for our team and said, get it done. And we didn't have much time. We went start to finish, I think, about 50 days when we made the decision. So we were cranking on that one. But we started to refine things as we went through the pilots. So what we're seeing is the students are saying it's very important that e-text costs less than user rented traditional paper textbooks. Then we asked the question, what would you pay for a new paper copy of textbook, used paper copy of the e-text used? And what this is showing is consistently, we went pilot two's the middle column, pilot three's in the right, and the relationship stayed pretty consistent that students are saying that the e-text is worth about one-third of a new paper textbook. That's an important benchmark, I think, and that is what has helped us as we've gone through the Net Plus service validation phase and trying to see how do we target in on pricing in a way that the students feel comfortable about this. And I'll take some questions, no more than about two questions, I think, so we can move along to Claire. Okay, we can catch them at the end. Claire?
Thank you, Bruce. And as Bruce said about his campus, I'm here representing our effort on campus, which was very much of a collaborative effort between Academic Technologies with strong support from our CIO and great partnership with the Cornell store and the library. So it's one of those things where we were looking at this, we ramped up quickly, and then also immediately took a look to the future. So one of the things that we did with the pilot that was a little different is we started out with the publisher model for providing content for the pilot, but in subsequent semesters, we very quickly moved to adding additional content sources that were readily available at the university. So sources from the library that were able to hook into the eText platform and utilize those tools. And in addition, working closely with the store with their goal of moving from paper course packs to digital course packs. And that was very important for finding the value of not just an e-textbook pilot, but an e-content pilot. So many of the contents that we see in the comments from Cornell really reflect this multi-layered approach. And we did it with an eye to the future. So we're going to talk a little bit about not just the pilot results, but then how we want to position it for the future and where we're looking to move on the next steps in the journey, along with the collaboration that NetPlus has been organizing across a myriad of schools of looking at not just what is a potential today, but what is a potential for the future. So like much of the data that Susan and Bruce have talked about, we had conflicting student perspectives. And this student perspective has evolved over the multiple semesters. As the data shows, it's more about a familiarity, getting past some of the additional adoption learning curves, that the more students used it, their perspective changed over time. So it's one of these things that it's really interesting and at the same time really difficult to say, is it an absolute preference or is it a technology adoption and will it change over time? And that's one of the things we really want to be careful about when you're interpreting the data is it was a single point in time. How is that changing over time as the usage is evolving, the familiarity is evolving, and, oh, by the way, at the same time, the formats and technology is evolving as well. So you want to look at the data with a little bit of a critical eye and make sure that you don't understand that it says absolutes. Some of the value that we found, which came out in the studies we did about not just sort of the basic usage, but the value to teaching learning, really came about where the students were actively engaged with the course materials. So anybody that's familiar with teaching and learning, you say, this makes sense, and it's really there, and that really came out. So it was not just about the medium or the technology, it was also about the whole process and how it worked with the learning design. Another question that we asked, which was a key one, is how integral was it to the learning? Now, this is a little interesting when you look at e-textbooks or digital course materials. Within the multiple schools that do this, and we had conversations around this as we were designing that, and my partner in crime was Stacey Maroney from Indiana University when we were designing the teaching and learning study, is saying is we couldn't find any research when we did a lit review about textbook studies or chalkboard studies or other studies about commonly accepted course materials or methodologies. And I'm being a little facetious when I say that. So we wanted to be careful that why were e-textbooks being held out as so different? And that was a conversation we had quite a bit. And you want to also keep that in mind as we're looking at that. So is it something that is unique to the medium, or is it just part of the teaching and learning ecosystem, and it just happens to be something new for that? So that's one of the things that comes out with the comments about student preferences and faculty preferences, and it's a really interesting aspect of the studies that we did and some of the experiences that we heard about from students and faculty. So I'm going to share some faculty perspectives from Cornell to give you an idea of that, in their own words, the value and the challenges that they had with our pilot studies.
In our class, we have students who are trying to research articles. They have homework.
Can you hear that?
Was
our technical person?
So that they're prepared to discuss in class. So the students found online access extremely helpful.
You don't have any sound on the video?
Access.
Up as high as it'll go. This is the important part, is that visual you just saw with...
I didn't have any negative feedback whatsoever, and I think they kind of felt like they were sort of on the, you know, kind of cutting-edge coolness factor of, you know, being one of the few courses that was using an e-textbook. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, the future that it might have, you know, within education. They were all very, very positive about it.
If I had students posting questions, you know, in certain areas of the text, and I start to see that 3 or 4 or 10 or 20 students have questions about the same thing, I can then post an annotation that addresses those questions, and that's then available to everybody. And one of the problems I have in my course is I can have a situation where all 300 students are asking the same question, and I don't find out about it for several days because, you know, at my next TA meeting, I ask the TAs what's going on, and, well, everybody's asking this question. Well, wouldn't that have been nice if I'd known that, you know, 5 days ago, and with the e-text, I could see that and I could post an answer or something to help them, a link or something.
I was able to annotate it and tell them exactly which pages I wanted them to read, and so I think it made better use of their time, so they didn't have to, you know, try to go through the whole chapter and look back at a syllabus and what to read and everything.
I'm just going to move on in the interest of time, so that is, we have a much longer video about that with the perspectives. But the first faculty that came up, who's also one of our associate deans in the College of Human Ecology, she's one of the people that took that big fat paper course pack and converted it into the digital materials that we've used. So what the cumulative impact of the faculty perspective is, even though it's all very new and disruptive, they're really very positive about it and saying, this is here, this is inevitable, and we really want to move on into the future. As we're moving from looking at the outcomes at Cornell University, is that the faculty were all universally agreed upon that finding value, and I think that's unusual in pilot sometimes where there was such positive feedback. They definitely want this as an option. With our partnership between the STORE and Academic Technologies, we want to have a common technology platform to make it a straightforward way to go from acquisition to access to integration into course materials. So that was the point in time that we were at, actually after the second semester in our pilot. So we made the decision of really looking at, in the last semester, is what is it going to take to move from pilot to service? And in conversations that we had on the campus, and in particular, really thinking about, we know it's disruptive, we know the mediums are changing, and it's all very flux, and the common analogy I look like, that I use, is 20 years ago, we had the web in its infancy, in its chaos, in its disruption, and all of us embraced it and saw the value for higher education. We're at a similar point with digital content and all of the possibilities in the merging, so it's not a reason to step back and say, yeah, let's wait a few years. So if we saw something like Mosaic or Netscape back in the day, we said, well, I'm going to wait till I like the interface better. We would have missed an opportunity. And that was a perspective that we were coming from at Cornell, is we understand where it's at, but we don't want to miss the opportunity. So faculty were in line, the bookstore was in line as a partnership, IT, which is what I represent in Academic Technologies, we're all ready to go. This is one of the examples, as we're moving from pilot to service, at the end of last spring, the faculty were like, okay, I'm ready for the fall semester, let's get going, you know, how can I do my materials or books or what have you. We're at an interesting point where all of us on the panel and all of the schools that are working with us together, higher education's ahead of the industry right now. All of these components are pulling it together saying, we're ready to go, we want to do that. Where are we? This is where we're at. With the Internet 2 discussions that we've all been having, is we want to embrace moving from pilot to service. At Cornell, we are still using the eTextBoard platform this fall. The challenge is we're not using it as much as we want to. We really only have it for a very small number of courses because of we're running into all kinds of barriers. And I think that it leads to some of the questions that we're having and things that the data is showing, is really wanting to look at some new models and embracing a different way of getting access to course content and thinking about course content a little bit differently. And like I said, you know, think differently. And that's the biggest challenge, which in some respect is a little bit of a reverse of a cycle, because traditionally those of us in technologies have been sort of the trying to bring people along when you look at the adoption cycles and all of that. And this has been a really interesting flipping of that experience where the faculty are ready to go and we're ready to go, but the industry's not quite there yet. So that will be the next challenge that we have. One thing to think about when you're talking about students and perception, and I think many of you have seen this YouTube video of the toddler trying to turn a paper magazine into a tablet, is, you know, this young lady is going to be in college in about 15 years or so. Okay. What's her preference going to be at that point as technologies evolve? So when you're thinking about the ecosystem and all of the things, is not to be too careful to say, at this point in time, this is an absolute preference, because we know it's going to change. So we're all working to really thinking about different models, different ways of looking at content. So we're looking to move from pilot to service, and we're working with the consortium with NetPlus to try to move that forward and really thinking of different ways to go about that. So that's where the pilot's been very helpful to us, to laying all of these components out. I'll now turn it over to Dana Voss, who has been instrumental in herding all of us cats together.
Thank you, Claire. So as Claire mentioned and as Bruce alluded to, after they went through several pilots, they came to us, to Internet 2, and they said, we are ready to move to a service. And we've had a number of institutions approaching us at the same time, generally those who had been working with us and have been going through these ETEX pilots over the last couple of years, and they were all interested in taking things to the next step and looking at what we could do to move to a service. So we took our NetPlus standard process. I'm sure many of you in the room are familiar with our NetPlus process, and we began what we call a service validation. Cornell University and Wisconsin-Madison are the co-sponsors of that service validation effort. And then, as you can see, University at Buffalo, University of Kentucky, South Florida, Virginia Tech, Winona State University have been working with us over the last several months, and we have been going through a process of putting together requirements and working with course load as a platform provider and the number of publishers for the content piece. And so as part of that, we took all the things we learned from the pilots, and we worked with those institutions on the guiding principles for this e-content initiative, and we then turned those into requirements, which we shared with the publishers and course load. And we are now in the process of having conversations with all of the various stakeholders. Of course, our hope is that we'll be successful in bringing these to you, our community, as services. But the dialogue continues. It's obviously not an easy pathway, and as my colleagues have expressed, there are just a number of barriers that we are working through. I know we only have a couple of minutes left. We do have an informal e-text gathering scheduled at 11:30 in the community lounge. I believe it's 205B. So those of you who are interested in continuing the dialogue will be there from 11:30 to noon today. With that, I will open it up for questions. We still have 5 minutes. Also, while you are thinking about the questions, I will point you to this blog, which Bruce Mass published a few weeks ago. If you go to the cio.wisc.edu, he's talking about the things that are important for the e-text initiative, and as you can see, some of the things that, again, have been covered today, the fact that the move to e-text is inevitable. Obviously, we're going through a disruptive change, and the e-text clock is ticking. Hi. Yes.
I actually work with the University of Arizona, and we just completed our first e-content pilot. And it's interesting that our findings have been lockstep with everything that you're saying today. Something that revealed itself that I have a question for you about is, how did you select your faculty? Because we had really strong faculty support too, but then we had to stop and analyze the fact that we allowed them to volunteer versus sort of assigning this to classes and getting a true measure of response, because your people that volunteer for this tend to be bleeding edge versus, you know, actual participants.
At Cornell, when we do pilots, we really try to look at getting a good cross-section to represent the demographics of large classes, small classes. So of the three faculty we showed, Professor Giambattista, he's in physics, and he actually was the author of the e-textbook that he used, which is also another benefit we had. But we really try to look at the campus demographics and get representative samplings of both disciplines and course sizes. But ultimately, it was voluntary. And from my awareness at other schools, it was a similar process as well.
And in fact, that's one of the questions that was asked in the overall evaluation of the pilot. There, many criteria were used. There was an attempt, I think, by most of the institutions that participated to be planful about it, but it did come down in the end to finding faculty who were willing to participate.
Yeah, and the only other thing I'd add is that, and our second pilot is McGraw-Hill, so we needed to find faculty that were using McGraw-Hill textbooks where their e-texts were available. And then in our third pilot, it was CourseSmart, and so it's a similar thing. We needed to map this together, talk to the faculty, and make sure that everyone was on board.
Just a quick question. Comment, well, actually, it's a question. The students were overwhelmingly in favor of low-cost textbooks, and I was just wondering what you think the impact would be on the open textbook initiatives that are around. There's a number in California, Washington, up in BC that are going open, and what do you think the impact would be on e-textbooks?
Well, I'll start by saying I really like the open initiative. I think it presents choices for faculty in our ecosystem. It's important to give faculty choices. Ultimately, the more choices, the more competitive we're going to be in this environment. So I personally would like to see an ecosystem where our colleagues from the publishing industry are there at the table. We have things like access that Internet 2 is getting to the Smithsonian collection. There's a wealth of public television materials. All these things being made available, open textbooks, I think is healthy for the industry and healthy for our students.
Any other questions?
I just was curious as to what kind of role, if any, did the librarians play in this project, in these pilots?
Well, I would just add that Carrie Nelson from our libraries has been essential to our team. She's one of the senior leaders. We have co-leaders with academic technology and libraries. So libraries stepped up to the plate immediately in this and started contributing. I see them as an absolute essential partner.
And that's definitely the case at Cornell. Immediately when we formed our pilot committee, the library was critical. And that was why in subsequent semesters we were able to incorporate library materials into our content choices and selections. And I think moving forward, that's sort of the key partnership that we have. And that was true of many schools within the multiple of the pilots as well. So I think looking at the technology, people, academic technologies, library and the store, those are really key collaborators that we recommend any school pull together to do this type of initiative.
Okay, we are at the top of the hour, so I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this morning, and again hope to see you at 11:30 in the community lounge. Have a good day.